For Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, you are listening to the Tank Slappers podcast with me, Lewis Duncan, and as ever, my podcast partner in crime, Oriol Puigdemont. Yuri, welcome to the podcast from a lovely sunny Spain.
Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very good. Thank you. Looking forward to another race week in Portugal. Of course, we've got, our first kind of test of the season, let's say, because Qatar was a bit of an odd weekend, but you know, we had the test beforehand, and we've the field was a lot tighter and a lot closer than it perhaps will be at coming races. And of course, the kind of the key things that we saw in Qatar, you know, Marc Marquez, Pedro Costa, I think we're going to get a kind of a real sense of where those guys are at coming into Portugal. But I think this is going to be a really, 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 really interesting and exciting and weekend.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a more clear picture about this season, because I mean, Qatar was just 2 weeks after the 3 weeks after the last pre-season test. Everybody was super used to that track, and also it's a very special track, and also the conditions are unique. There is nighttime, so yeah, I think in Portimao we will have a new track, a completely also a unique track, but a track that the riders haven't been there since last year. So it will be super interesting to see how Pedro Acosta adapts to this new track, and I think that Portimao will give us a more clear picture about what can we expect from him. I mean, he's always been fast in the small classes, but I also think that he will be fast there. There's only one question mark about his physical condition. I think he will be super fine with the arms. I think once KTM, Gas in that case, fixed the lever position, the rear device lever position, I think he will be fine and ready for more.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we spoke a bit about Pedro last week on the podcast, and we were, you know, as everyone, just so impressed with the 19-year-old's debut in Qatar. And he himself kind of comes into Portugal very much feet on the ground. He knows that what he saw in Qatar might not necessarily be what's going to happen in the next few races. But I can't sort of help but feel we're going to go to Portugal anyway, and Pedro's going to be quick. He's going to be, you know, in Q2. He's going to be there again. You know, maybe Friday will be a little bit more difficult for him, but this doesn't seem like a rookie that's going to go forward and then backwards and forward and backwards. This is going to be a very constant evolution for him.
I think so. I spoke with people from his team yesterday, and they say that they are super impressed about how he moves the bike, he's pretty unique on the bike. And I think that in a track like Portimao, which is like a roller coaster, I think he will make the most of this bike. And I don't know, it's just my feeling, but I think that we're gonna see him making the difference in compared with maybe the other KTM riders. I don't know, maybe I'm looking a bit too far, but I would say that because of his riding style, I think that Portimao, I think he will be very, very, very fast there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you look at Qatar, you know, he was very much, he was very much kind of comfortably the second fastest KTM rider all weekend. You know, his teammate Augusto Fernandez has had his struggles on the new bike, but you know, even before his crash in the Grand Prix, Jack Miller didn't look particularly, you know, like he was at the same level as Pedro and Brad Binder at this point. So I think, you know, one of the interesting things will be seeing how those guys step up, you know, to kind of match Pedro. You know, they've got a new threat, a new, you know, someone that's there to really upset, you know, upset the apple cart.
Well, yes, but the worst thing for them is that he's just enjoying, and you can see that on his face. So yeah, he will be a real threat for them all.
100%. I mean, sticking with the KTM, I mean, looking at Portugal, I mean, it's been a decent circuit for the RC16, you know, last year. Brad Binder was quick. Miller was quick there last year as well in his sort of debut for KTM. So, you know, after Qatar, Enea Bastianini said he felt that KTM was a lot closer to Ducati than maybe people realised. And I guess we'll maybe get the first kind of glimpse of whether or not that's true this weekend.
Yeah. I think we are all expecting the KTM to keep that level, because in my opinion it was the only thing the brand left. So it was the only missing, or the lack of being there all the time. So if they have solved these ups and downs, I think they will be a challenger and a real contender. Let's see. I think that, as you said, Binder showed an outstanding level in that first race in Qatar, and let's see how he performs in Portimao. I think the bike is there. They have made a huge step. Both KTM and GasGas, so the four riders are using the carbon frame, only one. I mean, Fernandez is the only one complaining a bit, but I think that what he really needs is to make a switch on his mental approach and try to make the most of this. This bike, speaking with all the technicians and also the riders, they say that this bike is definitely better than last year's bike. So the bike has made a step ahead. So and last year's bike was fast, and this year's bike is even faster. And in my opinion, Acosta will only push the limits of the other riders, especially Brad, because we know Jack is a bit in a difficult situation at the moment. He has no contract for next year, and as far as I know, this bike, KTM wants to give it to Pedro. So, but all the others, especially Pedro and Brad, are gonna push each other, and let's see the outcome of all this, let's say, fight.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the kind of the more interesting sort of storylines of this season, and you know, not to criticize anyone, but it would be good for the championship if KTM can have a much more kind of consistent sort of fight against Ducati this weekend, because if we go on what we saw in Qatar, you know, Pecco Bagnaia is going to be again incredibly difficult to beat this weekend. You know, of course he did the double last year in Portugal, but it just seems like the world champion has just taken, you know, another step, you know, and a really big step ahead, when you, especially on Grand Prix, you know, he looked incredible in Qatar.
Yeah. He looked super, his level of self-confidence is huge at the moment, and he has shown that. He showed that in Sanders' race in Qatar, because it was not easy what he did on the first lap. So he showed this level of he was super strong, super aggressive in his first lap. He knew that if he wanted to fight for the win, it was he was obligated to do this in the first lap. And he executed at 100% and he was superb. So I think we've seen what Pecco has shown during the pre-season. I think at this stage, he's the man to beat. Let's see what can Martin bring us. Don't forget that Portimao is a tricky scenario for him. He had that huge crash, and let's see how can he be affected by this fact. You know, when you go in a scenario in a track where you had such an important accident, it's always a question mark whether you've been able to, you know, to leave that behind or still a bit, influenced by what happened there. But I think Martin will be there. I think Martin will be there. I think, as you mentioned, Pecco is probably the benchmark at the moment and the guy to beat.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, Pecco as well seems to be the only Ducati rider right now on the GP24 kind of unbothered by this, you know, rear chatter problem that Martin's really struggled with. And, you know, that happened again to him in the Grand Prix. And you wonder as well, what you were talking about with Martin, how the crash from a few years ago might affect him, you know, how that's going to combine with that chatter problem. Is it going to make him more tentative? Is it going to, you know, is he in for a really difficult weekend? We can expect him to be quick in the sprint, but, you know, if Pecco is going to be the dominant one in the Grand Prix, you know, Martin really needs to, and Pramac need to, and Ducati need to find a solution to this chatter problem.
Yeah, well, I think it's how the riders see this championship. This championship is a long distance race, so it's important to try to be around there. I mean, maybe it's not the time for Martin to push at the limit, but I think his level of self-confidence is high enough to stay there, fighting for the podium, top four, top five. And there will be weekends also for Pecco, that he will need to be a bit more conservative. And it's just trying to don't make big mistakes. It's impossible to win the championship at this stage. And depending on which mistake you do, the mistakes that you do are probably gonna, make your life more difficult at the end of the year. So the most intelligent thing to do is to try to identify your strong tracks, your strong points, and make the most of them. But also identify the tracks where you are struggling the most and then try to be a bit more conservative.
Yeah, I mean, I guess being conservative was maybe one of the only flaw that Martin had last year in his kind of fight for the championship, was that crucial moments he made quite big mistakes. I mean, from being in the paddock, Yuri, kind of what's kind of sense have you gotten from Ducati, from Pramac, about how they sort of see how Martin has grown this year? Do they see a kind of... Does it kind of appear that he really has kind of learned from that kind of thing and he is going to approach this season differently?
Well, I think that he has learned a lot from last year but I mean, don't forget that, okay, Pecco won the championship, but Martin was really close.
Yeah.
And it would have been his first title. Now he understands that he has the talent, he has the experience to fight super close with a champion for the title. So I think that he has learned every year. The riders get more and more experience. So I think that this year we're going to have, as we have a better version of Pecco, we will also have a better version of Martin. What we had is probably the most explosive rider of them all in terms of pure speed. I think he, and don't forget that last year he went through a process of trying to be more stable, mm-hmm. and less fast at the beginning of the year. And then once he fixed these stability problems that he used to have in the past, then he pushed again.
Yeah,
for that pure speed. So he had an evolution. He also had an evolution last year. And I think that we are going to see a more complete version of Martin also this year. The problem maybe is that we have already seen even a better version of Pecco this year, which I love to be honest, to have this competition there.
Yeah, 100%.
Between
100%.
Them. There's only another factor that maybe this year might affect, which is that from my point of view, as you know, Pecco has set his future already with Ducati. Yeah. Martin needs to set his future. His contract expires at the end of this year, and there's, from what I see, from my point of view, there are only two options for him, which is being promoted to the factory team alongside Pecco or leaving Ducati. Because as far as I know, Pramac won't keep him next year because, of course, Ducati cannot afford paying his salary. He earns a lot of money because he deserves that. But Ducati won't be able or doesn't want to pay both factory riders, the riders on red, and also this kind of figures that they are paying now to Martin in a satellite team. So that's why I believe that whether he stays in Ducati dressed in red, or he has to find another manufacturer.
Yeah, of course, Gino Borsoi, the Pramac team boss, told our colleague Herman last week that he felt his time, that Martin's time at Pramac had come to a bit of an end, was the official quote. And you know, the complication is kind of obviously there with the fact that if Bastianini has a great season, Ducati are going to have to think about that. Of course, the biggest kind of complication is Marc Marquez. What happens with him? Of course, coming to Portugal, we're all very excited to see what his step, you know, the step of the process. As I saw on Twitter earlier, that his crew chief, Frankie Carcetti, says, you know, it's kind of a mixture of excitement and nervousness coming into this weekend, a very new challenge for him. But, you know, I think, much like we were saying with Acosta, I can't not see Mark, you know, very much being there, very much taking, you know, much more forward progression with him.
Yeah, I think that something, I mean, we need to understand what happened there in Qatar, because I think something happened there, because Mark was losing a lot of, acceleration in the last corner, and it was pretty obvious on the long straight area, whether it was the bike, whether it was the setup. But I think it's also kind of this kind of process that they need to learn, and they need to understand each other, both the team and Mark. And I think it's a normal process. The good thing for him is that it was a good result for him. So and then he needs to build up and be even stronger race by race. That's what I said before about Martin. I mean, if you in a bad weekend you are fourth, it's a good weekend.
Yeah,
it's a good outcome. So that's the approach that he and that any rider of the grid needs to have for this year.
Yeah, 100%, and for Mark as well. That's almost his whole kind of mantra for this year. It's a process. He's not coming, but he's not coming to win. He's coming to sort of rediscover, you know, his form. Portimao was a pretty good track for him last year in the Honda. You know, despite the crash in the Grand Prix with Oliveira, which led to all sorts of stewards controversy, which we'll not get into on this occasion. Hopefully we're well beyond that now. But, you know, Mark ended that Qatar weekend a lot more kind of at ease than maybe we've seen him for a long time. And I feel like, you know, there must have been a lot of nerves coming into Qatar. Now he comes into Portugal, at least he knows the bike, he knows a race, he knows all of that. He must come into this one just a bit more relaxed, and therefore that must make him just a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, I think he had a relief in Qatar, despite he was, as he said after the race, he was expecting, I wouldn't say that he was expecting that, but a better result was possible? Yes, of course. He would be happier. He would have been happier with a better result. Yes. Was it possible? Yes. But the full picture was good. Mm. Was good. Now that he understands, don't forget that it was the first race. Mm. And with all these kind of bikes, with all the aerodynamics, with all the devices, at this stage of the, at this era, with these prototypes, the difference between testing and race is much bigger than what it was in the past.
Yeah.
So, because the behavior of the bikes when you are in the middle of the race, in the middle of a battle, surrounded by other competitors, is completely different than when you are in a test.
Yeah.
So that's something important. We need to understand that it was Mark's first experience in a race with the Ducati, with all the slipstreams, with all the, yeah, the bike's behavior and all the pressure, all the, you know, the devices and everything. Now, we know how clever and how talented Mark is. Mm. And I'm convinced that he will take all that experience and it will have an impact next weekend.
Yeah. For sure, I 100% agree. Just sticking with the Ducati theme to finish off today's podcast, of course, we kind of got the news this week that Ducati has made another factory signing for next year in the form of Ferman Aldegay, which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. We knew that was going to happen. You reported it first, Yuri. Ducati hasn't confirmed where he's going to be, but we think Pramac is probably the most likely destination, given obviously what you've just said about Martin.
Well, the thing is that Ducati cannot confirm where he's going to race. They are not able to do that. I mean, the team needs to confirm where Martin is going to race. I mean, Ducati can confirm that Fermín will have a Ducati contract. Mm. But it's always the team who needs to confirm who's going to race with. So, yeah. And don't forget one thing. We have only one race in the pocket from this year. Mm-hmm. And Pramac has two riders, both Martin and Morbidelli. They need to find a way out first before confirming who's going to replace them. Otherwise, it would be very rude from them to announce Aldegar before. I mean, you know, that's something that only KTM does. Signing three riders for two bikes.
Yeah.
So
and that's gone well for them in the past.
So I mean, Ducati cannot say where he's going to race because they don't know. I mean, I know it's not that they don't know.
I know what you mean.
In my opinion, they know, and we all know that it's going to be Pramac, because don't forget that, well, because I've been told that it's Pramac, and otherwise I wouldn't have written, but I've been told by a Ducati source, of course, and also, but because Ducati cannot say, they are not allowed to say what he's going to race. It has to be the team who announces the rider. And now, Pramac has two riders with contract in place, and it's only one race. So it would be, in my opinion, it would be very rude not giving, for example, Morbidelli any chance or, you know, so it would be not the most polite, let's say, PR decision.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, and you have to say anyway, you know, this situation probably gives Morbidelli a bit more of a chance, you know, a bit more reason to relax and then would otherwise be the case if Martin, you know, had there been a bit more of a firm commitment, you know, for Martin to stay at Pramac.
And also don't forget that VR46 first is deciding whether he stays with Ducati or he signs for Yamaha for next year. Both VR46 riders have contract with VR46, not with Ducati. So also Pramac is the satellite team with factory support. It's the only one. So 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Even I can work that out, to be fair, and I was rubbish at maths. but, you know, looking at Aldegay and, you know, looking at Ducati, you know, Ducati's structure as a whole, this is a real kind of a bit of a power move from Ducati. They've got Bagnaia locked up for 2 years, even before the season started. They've got a really good young prospect locked up for 2 years, potentially four if they want it, on a very, very cut price rate. You know, we, as you've said, that Aldegay's contract is, you know, a couple of hundred thousand, 300,000 euros a year, which is by motorsports standards,
well,
not very much money. That's minimum wage.
That's a deal. That and that's a deal. What they, that's the approach they wanna apply into let's say a satellite team with factory support. I mean, they are super happy with Pramac, but it's too expensive for them. It's too expensive for Ducati as a satellite team. So they need to, they wanted to change that approach, and they say, okay, we're going to give you, we're going to give Pramac factory support, but we cannot afford 3 million contracts. So that's why they have signed, and that's why they have signed Aldegay now. So, and I think it's a win-win situation, because they know that it's a base salary with other, how do you call it, complements, pluses.
Yeah, bonuses.
Bonuses for results. So it doesn't mean that he's going to get 300,000 euros a month or around 300,000 euros a month, full stop. No. It will depend on his performance and his results, which I think it's a really good formula. If your priority is not to, you know, to get loaded by debt.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't complain very much if I was, you know, earning 300,000 euros a year. But you know, from an outsider, that seems like a very good deal. But of course, you know, you look at some of the contracts in play, and it's very small by comparison. But like you say, it's a win-win for Ducati. They get what is shaping up to be a very good prospect. But if he doesn't work out, they haven't spent much money on him.
He had another options, but he decided to sign for the manufacturer that he believes that will offer him the best material. So it has a cost. This decision has a cost in terms of money. So if you have the best bike, you need to make an effort. And that's what Ducati ask the riders, of course. I mean, in my opinion, I think, as far as I know, the base salary of Fabio, for example, is higher than Pecco's. But because the base salary of Pecco with all the bonus matches probably what Fabio is getting in Yamaha. So, but it's just a balance. I mean, if you want the best bike, okay, but you need to make an effort. And I think it's fair.
Yeah, 100%. I guess the biggest bonus there for Pecco is that he's not riding a Yamaha right now. So,
yeah.
For Aldegay, it'll be interesting how that kind of impacts his Moto2 season. Qatar wasn't a great weekend all in for him, but you know, with that kind of assurance that he's got a MotoGP step next year, that in theory should make this year a little bit more risk-free for him, let's say.
Yeah, well, I think that what happened in Qatar was a one episode, because it happened also to Arbolino, and don't forget that it was the first weekend of the Pirelli tires, and the teams are still trying to, you know, to get used to how they managed the tires with all the complements, tire warmers, how they work, which range of temperature is the best for make the most of the tires. And I think it's not gonna repeat next weekend in Portimao.
We'll
probably have a more real picture of what Aldegar can offer us.
Yeah, I hope so too, because not to kind of be the party pooper, but everyone was like, oh, that Qatar Moto 2 race was incredible. And I was like, well, it was actually a bit too chaotic with the tires dropping off and big, like, you want to see some tire drop, you don't want to see just massive fall off, you know, that's like Formula One a few years ago where just you had tires dropping off silly amounts and it was a bit, it doesn't make racing necessarily interesting. I want to see riders kind of push and really go for it.
Probably racing more spectacular, but I wouldn't say that is the most fair.
It's not real racing.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the tires and the management of the tire needs to be a bit more natural and balanced.
Yeah, 100%. But like you say, you know, it's a learning process on the Pirellis, and I'm sure the teams will have a bit more of an easier time in Portugal. We'll wrap it up there, Yuri. Thank you ever so much, as always, for your company.
Thank you.
And I'll look forward to speaking to you next week and hearing everything you've learned from the Portugal paddock. We'll be back next week to review what will hopefully be another exciting round in the MotoGP World Championship. If you like what you heard, you can go and listen to all of our other podcasts and stuff on all of our podcast platforms, and obviously keep on autosport.com and motorsport.com and all of our various regional language versions of motorsport.com for all of your latest MotoGP news this week and into next week. This has been the Tank Slappers podcast for Autosport and Autosport Magazine, and we will see you next time.